Hello, I am Nabil Shaban, and you are listening to the Sirens of Audio.
Now, you see that scanner? That is what I call a scanner up there.
Are you reporting for duty, Sirenly One?
Yes. We meet again, CyberMe 2.
Cyber Control reports that complaints regarding the Me 1, Me 2 segments have been initiated.
Report back to Cyber Control that those reports have been eradicated.
A satisfactory response, CyberMe 2.
Excellent.
Cyber Control reports that the Big Finish Randomoid Selectatron has been successfully infected with the Haydock virus. It will now only produce episodes of Who's Round to the hosts of the Sirens of Audio.
This is excellent news, Me-One.
Agreed.
These We've Got Randomoids episodes are irrelevant.
Agreed.
G'day audiophiles, you are listening to the Sirens of Audio, the podcast that explores the universe of Doctor Who in the audio medium. My name is Dwayne, and he is...
I'm Philip. G'day Dwayne, g'day audiophiles.
It's good to be back, Philip.
Fantastic to be back.
I love this time of the month. It's time for another randomoid selection that the Big Finish Randomoid Selectatron has thrown our direction, and it's going to be an Eighth Doctor episode, so... Very much looking forward to that. Did you have a good time reviewing those old stories that it got thrown at you?
I had a great time. I'd actually listened to two of them quite recently. I often like going through companions in a row. And so I actually did all the Lucy stories fairly recently.
Okay.
So the couple of Lucy ones I'd actually heard, but I hadn't gone back and listened to Scaredy Cat for a very long time. In fact, I'm not sure... Now, I would listen to it once at the time. I did do a Charlie Blitz before Lucy, but that's a couple of years ago now. But it was good to go back and actually listen and pay a bit more attention to the Scaredy Cat.
Okie doke. Before we get to that, there's something up ahead. It is a rabbit hole. Here we go. Meep, meep. All right, Philip. So, for this rabbit hole... I want to mention briefly a tweet that the BBC put out in relation to fan creations. Do you recall that tweet that was circulating recently?
I think I recall some fans reacting to the tweet. I'm not sure I actually saw the tweet. What was the tweet?
I think they tweeted some guidelines on the use of copyrighted material in fan productions, and they were basically saying that, because I think there are a couple of productions that got removed from YouTube. And yeah, they were saying, here are our guidelines. These have been out for years. There's just a review of them. Virtually even fan fiction, just writing a short story, as long as it's for your own personal use and you don't go and publish it somewhere, that's not on. So the BBC had a few things to say about that, and some fans reacted to it. I can understand why fans would react to it. Can you understand that too, Philip?
I can fully understand why fans who have kept the show alive for 50 or plus years and has, you know, fiction and Doctor Who and drawings and art have been a part of every single viewer's history for decades, why they might react to being told they can't do that anymore.
Yeah, if you think about it, that could extend to even... magazines that we've been involved with, like Data Extract in Australia. So they're writing short stories in there, publishing them as part of the magazine. The artwork's being published there. And I don't really understand why the BBC would have a problem. As if I was someone who was trying to get noticed as someone who was creating fan fiction or fan art or whatever, I'd be thinking, well, hang on. Didn't Russell T. Davies and Mark Gatiss and Nick Briggs and all those fans from years ago start off doing the exact same thing? And, you know, we're sort of getting raked over the coals now. It baffles me a little bit why the BBC would even care, because, you know, it's not as if it's going to overtake the program or any licensed media in any way. It's just done for fun. The only thing that I can put it down to is potentially the fact that on some of the platforms that these medias get released on, for instance, I know there was a fan-made audio that was asked by the BBC to be removed from YouTube. Now, YouTube is a platform where you can monetize things. So if they got a hint that this particular channel was in a position to be able to monetize it, the BBC may have felt that, no, that's overstepping the mark, because never before have fans really been in so much of a position to be able to monetize things through social media, particularly YouTube and other forms of revenue. So that could be why they stepped in there. But writing a story and publishing it on a website, short story, not sure I agree with that myself.
I kind of wonder whether the problem may be what happens when your fan fiction is better than what's being produced by the BBC. And maybe they'll react to the fact of these amazing ideas, these amazing concepts, you know, these great views of the Doctor, and maybe it wasn't matching with their current vision.
Is there really someone up there in the BBC looking at these stories and going, oh, that's just too good. It's you know, outshining us. Don't know. It's a theory, but I don't know.
I could say more, but I shan't.
I think that perhaps, I'm not talking about just Doctor Who, but writing in general, there are some people in these positions that probably wouldn't know a good story if it jumped up and gave them a haircut. So that's just what I think of that. Anyway, you're probably thinking similar.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if part of the problem, I know Big Finish stopped accepting submissions, open submissions.
Oh, but that was years ago.
It was years ago, but the reason why they partly stopped doing it was because a couple of people said, you know, stories came out and they said, oh, you stole my idea from their submission. And so where they countered that was by just not accepting submissions.
Is that why they stopped?
Yes, that's why they
stopped. I had no idea.
Yep, because there's a few people who claimed that the stories were theirs. And I wonder about the BBC's, you know, in case Chris Chibnall comes up with something that a 12-year-old fan might write. Oh. They want to make sure that no one can claim, see, it was on the internet beforehand.
Possibly. Who knows? I guess, because Big Finish, the BBC gets to vet everything that Big Finish make before they make it, don't they? So, whereas fan fiction, they can't do that.
And sometimes after they've made it.
Yeah, true. Absolutely true. Oh. That made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up when you said that, Philip. All right, we'll leave that rabbit hole. That's just a few of my thoughts on that topic. And we'll jump out of the rabbit hole and we'll get into the main meat of our episode, which is...
We've got Randomoids.
Yes, we've got Randomoids. Episode 5, Attack of the Selectatron. The Randomoid Selectatron has thrown up a couple of Eighth Doctor stories for us. The first one, I'm going to start with the oldest one first, Philip.
How do things begin? With a word? An action? A decision? I mean, in the beginning, there was what?
So, Gareth, what do you think?
Not much.
This is the Doctor's pride and joy.
A garden? What the hell's that?
Security alarm. Something's either broken in or out of the restricted area, and frankly, neither option bears thinking about.
Two planets?
Yes, the one on the left is called Kaludar. The one on the right is its sister world, Endara. According to legend, the Kaludari made a pledge several millennia ago never to set foot on Endara.
Why?
They almost destroyed themselves.
There must have been something. And what was that something? Did it come preloaded with good and evil and all points in between? Or did that come later? You see, starting points are important. Great levelers. No one has an advantage. Because no one knows what's going to happen next.
That story is an Eighth Doctor story featuring the companions Charlie and Keres. It is the second story set back in our universe after they left the Divergent universe. So the very first story that when they left the Divergent universe, you remember The Next Life ended on a fantastic cliffhanger where they confronted Davros and the Daleks, and it went into Joe Lister's story, Terra Firma. So that was a really good story. And then we came to Scaredy Cat. I might go to you first, because you might be surprised at some of the things I've got to say about Scaredy Cat, Philip.
Okay. I think Scaredy Cat had a fairly troubled creation. It was originally designed to be written before they went to the Divergent Universe. Then it was reworked several times to try and get it to work in the Divergent Universe. Then, because the show was coming back on TV and they thought people would have trouble jumping into Doctor Who was in the Divergent Universe, they brought it back out of the Divergent Universe a couple of seasons early. So I think the story's had a bit of a workout because of it. I was actually surprised. It is the shortest monthly release yet, well, ever released now, because they've finished the monthly range. So, yeah, at just over 90 minutes, it's a very, very short four-part story. And it does feel short.
It's actually 79.
Oh, is it only 79?
The whole thing would fit on a single CD.
Right, okay.
So three lots of 17-minute episodes, and the final episode's 21 minutes.
Right. It feels like Patrick Troughton's show. There's a Patrick Troughton one, which is almost that short. So it does actually feel that it... You just get to cliffhangers too fast, and I'm just not quite sure. Maybe they should have turned it into a three-parter or done something different with it.
And the cliffhangers aren't that good either.
And the cliffhangers aren't that good either. I don't think you liked this, Dwayne. I'm getting this feeling that...
Oh, you're getting the sense?
I'm getting the sense
through the interwebs? Sorry, I'll let you finish.
No, that's okay. Listen, I mean, I love Charlie in everything that she does. I think India Fisher is just an amazing actress. How you pronounce it?
Keres, isn't it?
Keres, thank you. Keres. I do remember someone had a talk, I think it was, maybe it was Russell T. Davis, talking about the fact you should never put an apostrophe in a person's name. So Keres, I'm not sure he ever particularly worked for me, even in the Divergent Universe. And yeah, he's supposed to be taking on the character of people around him, so I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen with him, with one of the main plot devices. I think when your main character is a mass-murdering psychopath, it's hard to feel a lot of sympathy towards him at all, or motivation. So it has some interesting moments. It has some scenes with India that aren't too bad. I think they're doing their best, but I just don't think it quite works. So what about you, Dwayne? What do you think?
Okay. So as I was saying before, this is the second outing back in the normal universe. Yes, Keres, I found him much more sympathetic in the Divergent Universe stories, because that's where he's meant to be. As with getting any character along with the TARDIS crew who doesn't look humanoid, it's going to pose problems along the track. It doesn't really in this story. It's not even mentioned once, I don't think.
You wouldn't know he looks like... Do they call him Lizard Boy once?
I'm not sure. Well, he could have done.
You're right.
There's hardly a mention of it.
Yeah.
And he looks so different that you would think that there would have to be a mention of it in pretty much every story. So Will Schindler wrote this, and he also wrote The Twilight Kingdom, which was in the first season from the Divergent Universe, the one that starred Michael Keating as the bad guy in that one. So The Twilight Kingdom was an interesting story too. It was... that's what I find with Will Schindler. He's got these big, massive, different ideas, very much like Mark Platt, and very much like Mark Platt. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't, but he hasn't had as much chance to write as Mark Platt has. So Twilight Kingdom was okay, but this one, so many ideas in this, and really interesting ideas too. So it's almost like the way I feel about the current era of the TV series, really. It got all the ingredients there. It looks fantastic. Really good ingredients for the whole story, but the execution, just not there for me. So, you know, you've got heaps of different ideas. The morphic field of the planet. You've got the ancient past virus that was injected into that colony millennia ago. You've got a scientist who's seeking revenge. You've got the criminal that sounds very eloquent and lots of lovely monologues throughout the first few episodes. Then all of a sudden he turns into your typical, very generic villain towards the end of it. So, yeah, I found him interesting until we found out who he really was, that character. Flood was his name. It's unusual that, you know, that there is a Big Finish story that I dislike to this degree. Usually, even if it's not as good as others, there are still things that I can pick out to like about it. And as I've just said, there are things in this story that I can pick out and like. There's great ideas, just not executed properly. And I wonder if there were more troubles with this production than we know, because most of the cast here never appeared in any other Big Finish. There's only one appearance. So Michael Chance, who played Flood, the villain, he's been in a few more recent Big Finish episodes, but all the other cast that are non-regular cast haven't appeared again for Big Finish. So we've got Rosalind Blessed, who's Brian Blessed's daughter. She plays the little giggling girl that's going throughout there.
How old would she have been when she played that role?
I have no idea.
Because she would have been an adult, though, wouldn't she?
I'd say so.
Because I always have issues with adults playing children, because it just doesn't work. And I mean, it's hard for children to play children either, because they can't act.
Mm.
But it just, yeah, that just annoyed me. It was this silly voice, because she's supposed to be at five. And just, yeah, that whole voice got to me.
Mm. Who else is in there? Another big name that we only ever see once in Big Finish. So I don't know whether he had a bad experience through this and never came back or what, but Arthur Bostrom. So I know Arthur from Hello, Hello. He plays the Good Morning policeman. Did you know that, Philip?
No. My father used to watch Hello, Hello. I could never quite get into it.
I didn't like it. So, yeah, this is his only, one and only appearance in Big Finish. And so part of it is the length as well. A lot of complaints against Big Finish during this period and a little bit earlier were that the stories went too long and this one went too short. So Nigel Fairs directed it too. So
it's actually the first show Nigel Fairs directed.
Ever?
In the monthly range.
So he'd done Tomorrow People, though.
He'd done
Tomorrow
People. So this is his first monthly range. I do think the issue is with the script. It had potential. Because it started off with like a Garden of Eden, Satan, evil. And so I thought it was going down a recreation kind of myth path, which it kind of does bits of. And then it just veers off to, I just don't think it knows what it's doing. So there's moments that actually are quite good, but then it just doesn't quite work.
There's too many ideas in it. Like, right. They should have focused on one thing and created a good story about one or two things instead of about five things that are in there. So, unfortunately for me, I think this is probably my least favourite Eighth Doctor story in the whole Eighth Doctor range. And yeah, I actually dislike this one. I don't often say that, but I do on this occasion. Sorry, Big Finish. All right. So, anything else to say about this one?
No, I will make sure I don't tag the author into this one, will we?
No, please don't. Please don't. Maybe don't even tag Big Finish this time. Who knows?
No, I might avoid doing that.
Okay, so let's move on to the next one. The next one that the Randomoid Selectatron threw at us was The Vengeance of Morbius. Here's a trailer.
The Vengeance of Morbius by Nicholas Briggs.
He always did inspire such peculiar loyalty.
Morbius
is dead. We all know that, right?
Please.
Oh, beg away. You think I'm actually going to take any notice?
He was executed by the Time Lords.
Yeah, and when have the Time Lords ever done anything for us?
That lunatic Solon somehow managed to keep hold of his brain, but I could have stopped
him. Who did what?
No power in the universe can bring him back.
And what would you know of Morbius?
Oh, no.
It's the Stellar Manipulator. It's ripping the heart out of the TARDIS.
Come on, we're going to make it. Think positive.
Well, I'm all out of ideas, so positive thought is just about all I've got left.
Look at you. Weak and defenseless, a perfect example of your race.
Lucy! Master, no!
You're going to bring Morbius back to life.
Get away from me!
Always relying on puny females.
Hey, don't go blaming it on me. It was just a thought from a mere mortal.
You, a mere mortal? Get away with you, Lucy Miller.
Can you hear me?
Zarodnyx has a Morbius fixation.
I am Morbius.
So, The Vengeance of Morbius is the second part of a two-part story. And they were the Eighth Doctor and Lucy Miller adventures were kind of following the same kind of format as the TV series. So they were single, by series two, they were using single episode names, but linking the stories together like they were doing in the TV series. They didn't do it in series one. They had part one and two of the opening and closing stories in the season, but this one, it was a two-parter at the end, so we had to listen to Sisters of the Flame as well, didn't we, Philip?
We did. So I suspect the reason why the change in names was just so that it was hiding Morbius coming back. Because even with the crediting, Morbius isn't credited. He's credited as the Revenant. So I think Big Finish were trying to hide the big reveal of who it was going to be. Though I do think that once you got into the Sisters of the Flame and worked out with Sisters of the Flame, you had a fair chance of knowing Morbius was on his way back. But it was probably...
So was he appearing throughout the whole season? Like, clues happening throughout the whole season?
No. That's what I'm saying. But in terms of when they were releasing story titles... Well, it's a bit... Once again, this is a bit weird, because these were all made for BBC 7.
That's right, yeah.
Which, you know, us in Australia, we don't really know what's going on. But, you know, you guys are in the UK, yay! You'd understand BBC 7. But my understanding is BBC 7 is a radio station that does lots of stories. So Big Finish had originally sold these couple of seasons of Doctor and Lucy, and that's why Lucy was created for BBC 7. And this is the second run of shows. But Sisters of the Flame and Vengeance of Morbius were both didn't get played at the end of the second season. It was a 12-month gap between... Oh. Yeah, so I'm not sure whether it wasn't rating or what the reason was, but these two were played 12 months after the rest of them had been played. So I couldn't, in my research, I couldn't find out why that had happened. Obviously, no one was, you know, it's hard to find the bad stuff and the reasons behind why things seem to have gone wrong. But for whatever reason, these two were held back. And it's good they held them both back because there's a bit of a cliffhanger with Sisters of the Flame. But you do really need to listen to both parts. So even though our randomoid selector gave us just Vengeance and Morbius, we needed to listen to them both.
Yeah, they are both connected.
They are both connected. It is a bit Stephen Moffat in terms of the second episode doesn't necessarily follow that closely, because Sisters of the Flame is very much a standalone Lucy show. The Doctor hardly appears in it. And so it's very Doctor light, but it all comes back together again in Vengeance of Morbius.
It reminded me of Bad Wolf and Parting of the Way. So Bad Wolf is a totally different setting in the game station. And then the second one, the Daleks come in. So
yeah.
Even though that is a two-parter, but totally different style episodes.
Yes, yeah. And there's a lot of characters that have lots of large parts in the first part, but hardly at all. Because there's some really big, big names.
Yeah, this is a Star Trek, Star Wars crossover with Doctor Who, this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, because, you got Morbius, firstly, who's, as I said, credited as the Revenant, but played by Samuel West. Which he's not he played the Rani's assistant in Dimensions of Time, which probably isn't the greatest of fames for him. But he actually plays it really well, and
yeah,
which yeah. I mean, Morbius hasn't really got a huge role. He's not the main character. Is really Zarodnix, I think he pronounces Zarodnix.
Zarodnix, yeah.
Who's played by Kenneth Cooley. And he's the sidekick of Darth Vader. He's the Admiral in Empire and Strikes
Admiral
Back.
Admiral Piet, is it?
Piet, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't start off as Admiral because the first Admiral gets choked to death by Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Darth Vader turns and says, yeah, congratulations, Admiral. Yeah, and, sort of, and you can see a look on his face, which is, I really don't want to be Admiral, as he sort of looks down the dead body at his feet of the previous Admiral, who was also a Doctor Who actor. Was that Michael Sheen? Was the first Admiral in Empire Strikes Back?
In the Empire Strikes Back? I think he might have been, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Michael Sheen, who plays the first Admiral and then drops dead. So the character is played by Kenneth Cooley, and he's actually really well played. Nothing really like the Admiral at all in Empire. And then, as you said, you know, Star Trek, so Rosta, who's like a giant centipede, he's played by Alexander Siddig, who's Dr. Bashir in Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
Once again, I think I've said before, I struggle with these characters that aren't particularly humanoid. Haven't I said that to you? I'm not a huge fan of the, I don't know whether it's, I'm speciesist or something. There's certain stories in which all the characters aren't human. I struggle a bit with that. Maybe I've got a lack of imagination. I mean, that being said, the follow-on to Vengeance of Morbius is probably the worst example, where they're all sea anemones and you know, that sort of creatures. And
there is an image on the cover of Sisterhood of the Flame of this character.
Yes, I know. Anyhow, really well played, however. So once again, I think the story works well, but you know, Rosta, who had a huge role in the first story, Sisterhood of the Flame, hasn't got much to do, which is a bit of a shame in this one. Zradnik sort of carries through across. So great supporting cast, really excellent supporting cast. Susan Sheridan, that's not right.
Sheridan Smith.
Who's Susan Sheridan? Sheridan Smith is just amazing. And when Lucy first started, I found her really obnoxious and difficult to deal with. But I was supposed to think that. I've actually become really fond of her. So by this stage, she's actually, as much as she's brash and she's loud and she's painful at times, she's really got a real heart to her and a real concern for others. And Sheridan Smith is just an amazing actress, and she's just gone on to the most amazing career. I've got a couple of musicals I've got that she's starring in, because she goes on to the West End to play in a number of theatres and shows. And she's just had a stunning career. Once again, Big Finish found this no one actress. And by the end of her reign, I mean, they basically write her out because she's just too busy to get anymore.
I noticed on BritBox she's playing Cilla Black in a miniseries about Cilla, called Cilla.
Cilla.
Have you seen that?
I have seen it, and it is amazing performance.
Yeah.
And I love Cilla Black. That's another one for my father thing.
Some of the roles that she's played, she's in a lot of things that I've seen recently, and she's a very good character actor.
I often don't recognise her. It's often not till the credits come up I go, oh, okay, because I've missed her, because of how she's portrayed, how she dresses. She really does, she's a character actor of brilliance.
Hmm. Absolutely. You want me to point out a few of the notes that I've taken? I've actually... Look, I've got notes.
I can't see
notes.
Okay.
I've got notes. Okay, so, did you notice that several times Lucy is referred to throughout this story as the Doctor's helper? So already back then, they're dropping the word companion. I don't know if that's in reaction to the TV series, not ever using the word companion. With her being a working class accent, where she's sort of like a cross between the Ninth Doctor and Donna, isn't she? With her persona, and this is still 12 months before Donna came along. This is the year before 2008. Although no, she would have had that been in that special, that Christmas special to start with. I did pick up on the fact that they were calling her a helper, and they were really kind of labouring the point too. There's a character in there called Straxus, who appeared in the first series. He's a Time Lord agent. He has different roles in different stories that he's in. I think this time he's working for the High Council. I think at some point he's working for the Celestial Intervention Agency. And then he appears again. He regenerates into, I can't remember the actor's name, but whoever played the guy that was in Amy's Choice. What was his name? Can't remember that actor's name, but anyway, TV series fans will know who I'm talking about when I'm talking about Amy.
Dobbin and Harry Potter.
Yeah, the little fella. He plays a future incarnation of Strax in Dark Eyes. Straxus, not Strax. So he's an interesting character that's there. Interesting that they had Katarina Olsen playing the leader of the Sisterhood when she also had a major role and still has a major role even at the end of this episode. The same character, the Headhunter, comes back.
Well, I think it's because they were employing her. They decided to use her for the whole episode. And Toby Jones.
Toby Jones, that's it. Very good. He's not Straxus in this one, but he is in Dark Eyes. Yeah, the terminology, I picked up on the fact that Lucy called the Doctor her mate. That was something that Donna was yet to say in the TV series. So Big Finish did it first, folks. So we've already talked about the huge crossover cast. Samuel West, you know, he's the son of Prunella Scales and Timothy West. Did you know that?
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah, and something that I've seen him in recently that I adore is All Creatures Great and Small, the remake. He plays Siegfried.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's an awesome new adaptation of the series. I don't know how well it's gone down critically, but I loved it myself personally.
They've been more than one. They've been a couple of seasons, haven't they now?
No, only one.
Only one? Okay.
Well, there might have been one in the UK, but it's not on BritBox here, I can tell you that. So I was thinking of all the way through, the Sisterhood were off Khan throughout this story, but they were back on Khan in the TV series, and that was ultimately answered in this one because we had the big reset button that was pushed.
Where was their eternal flame? Where were they getting their life elixir from if they'd left Khan?
I don't think that was ever really addressed. Because I was thinking, how are they getting their power? This is, you know, it was all based on the flame. So if Khan was, if they were booted off Khan by whatever his name was, Zarodnix, how were they getting their power? Maybe they were powerless and they were just trying to find their way back.
But also, wouldn't they be aging to death? Because without the elixir burning, you know, the flame burning the rock that created the elixir.
Oh, we're getting picky now, Philip. Let's just enjoy it.
Okay. Sorry.
But yes, I was thinking the same.
There's not a lot I want to pick on, but that was just something I thought wasn't quite there.
And I did pick up that Alexander Siddig's character was, very underused in this episode, but highly used in Sisters of the Flame, the one beforehand. So if you want more Alexander Siddig than you get in this one, you're going to have to listen to both of them. I did enjoy this a heck of a lot more than Scaredy Cat, I can tell you that. But it still left me rather flat at the end of it. I felt that Morbius, the potential of Morbius was just so underutilized. Like, he could have been used a lot more. And ultimately, at the end, the story didn't seem to be about Morbius. Like you said, it seemed to be more about Zarodnix and his plans to get Morbius back. Because towards the end, we go along this timeline where Morbius has been taking over the universe and it's 10 years down the track. And
it was all just word word peril.
Hmm.
You know, Morbius came back from battle. How are you feeling? Oh, I just conquered another planet. So, we're not seeing him do anything. We're not seeing the danger.
I think it was a real waste, particularly
show, don't tell. And there was just too much telling.
I think it was a big waste of opportunity there with Samuel West. I'd love to see him back somehow as Morbius. I don't know how that can ever happen. But an interesting thing about this is an end of season episode which ends on a cliffhanger. So
two cliffhangers.
Absolutely two cliffhangers, because you've got the one cliffhanger where the Doctor seems to have died, and then you get this character, the Headhunter, comes up and shoots Lucy.
After the credits.
After the credits.
You've got to make sure you listen. Don't jump through the music, guys, like I usually do, because you'd miss it.
Yeah. And then we get, and that takes us straight, I thought, I wonder if there's a special in between. I had a look, and it goes straight into the first episode of series 3 of the 8th Doctor and Lucy Miller, which is Orbis, so which is a bizarre story as well.
I hate it.
I think that's a Mark Platt, isn't it?
I'm not sure, maybe it is.
So, yeah.
But, I struggle with that one again, just sort of the Doctor making friends with jelly babies, jelly blubber. I just think, oh, no, it's just... And they're all just eating each other, and, oh, yeah. Anyhow, I mean, it's great to make alien worlds, and I guess it's lovely to explore.
It's written by Alan Barnes and Nick Briggs.
Oh, there you go.
So, just like
and
this
was. This is Nick Briggs, too, yeah.
Hmm. So, yes, I think there was a lot of potential that was untapped in this one. It was a great idea. I liked the way Alan Barnes in the extras said the way they discovered this was they just looked through an encyclopedia of monsters, and they got to monsters and villains, and they got to this one and went, yep, we're going for Morbius. We didn't want Daleks, didn't want Cybermen, he said, but we went for Morbius. So it's good to do that as a box-ticking exercise, but they certainly had a lot more potential they could have tapped into. That's just my view on that. I will say that the standout performance in this is absolutely Sheridan Smith. When the Doctor goes over the edge of that cliff and she is crying, I think to Zarodnik's, I think, or is it someone else? But anyway, she's crying about the loss of the Doctor, and that almost moved me to tears. That was so powerful. Do you remember that, Phil? That scene?
I do. Yes, it's powerful. It's certainly the first time I heard it, it affected me. I don't know, maybe more. Yeah, it was interesting because we listened to the Axon episode recently with Evelyn Smythe, and that still really tugged my heart, and I'd heard it a couple of times before. This didn't have the same impact, but it was really well acted, I guess because I know what happens. And I also think you're right in terms of they went to all this work of resurrecting Morbius in a way that was actually quite convincing and believable, which is good, and then they threw him off the mountain.
Yep.
It was just
like that.
It was really a bit too rushed. Wicked. Yeah. I mean, really, this episode should have been a two-parter by itself. They could have had Sisters of the Flame and then had a two-parter with Morbius and said a lot more showing rather than telling. Nicholas Briggs is usually very good with doing that, and he sets up scenes and sets up character. It didn't quite... Yeah, it wasn't quite to what even he can do usually. But still some good stuff in it.
So overall, these two stories that we've looked at tonight, one for me, a definite fail in my eyes. And this one, Vengeance of Morbius, good story, but falls a bit flat.
Yeah, well, that's the joy of Randomoid, isn't it? We don't know what we're going to get.
Yeah. So on that note, we can't go too much longer because we said this was going to be a short one. So let's keep it short and we'll go to the Randomoid Selectatron and we'll see what's coming up next time.
Woohoo!
All right, let's hit there. Let's select a random Big Finish release. No. All right, we're going to do this one, Philip. It's a box set, so we only have to pick one this time.
Okay.
And I think you're going to like this. We are going to look at Blake 7, The Liberator Chronicles, Volume 3.
Oh, fantastic.
The Armageddon Storm. So this looks like it's going to feature Michael Keating, Paul Darrow, and Jan Chappell, all written by Mark Wright and Kevin Scott, by the look of that. Let's see. Yeah, I think it's going to be a good one.
It is a fantastic box.
So I won't pick another one. We'll just go with that.
I've not listened to it since it came out, but I do remember it being... Because the first two box sets are all... Each story is very different and unique. These stories are all interwoven together, which actually makes it even more powerful. But yeah, it's really... Yeah. Oh, good. Excellent.
We're having a very nice Blake 7 time lately, aren't we? Should we tell him? No. We won't tell him.
Definitely not.
We've got some great Blake 7 stuff coming up for you guys, so stay tuned. Stay tuned. It's going to be good. All right. Let's go on to our recommendations for this episode.
Whose turn is it, Dwayne?
Let me see. I've just got my list here. It's your turn, Philip.
My turn, okay. So I'm recommending The Writer's Tale by Russell T. Davis and also Benjamin Cook. So Benjamin Cook at the time was working for Doctor Who magazine. He approached Russell T. Davis about how do you write, what's the writing process. His original plan was to do an article for the Doctor Who magazine. But as Russell started writing these emails back to him late at night, which are just huge and long and funny and sad sometimes, they worked out they had a book. And so we're actually watching the whole thinking process going behind how Russell creates Doctor Who. And just getting the insight into his mind is amazing. It's interesting where it started from, knowing where the forces would go. Because at the beginning of the book, he's talking about this character Penny he's creating, and Penny's father and Penny's mother, and when we're going to first meet her, and all these scenes. And he's even talking, there's been a bit of talk in there about, you know, she's a bit like Donna, and you know how Donna had worked. And you know Donna's coming back, but at this stage they hadn't bothered to ask Catherine Tate whether she'd come back. And when they asked her, she said yes straight away. And it wasn't even Russell that asked her, because they just assumed she wouldn't come back. She was too big a star. Why would she come back for a season? And so just watching him form this character who's not going to exist, And she's so much like Donna, because you just see he wants Donna back, but he hasn't thought about it yet. So it's a lovely book. It's charming. It's, you know, written late at night. Emails backwards and forwards between the two of them. Yeah, really, I don't know why I put off reading for so long, but I'm learning lots and just really enjoying it.
Awesome.
What about you, Dwayne? What have you been listening to or watching or whatever you're going to do today?
I'm going to recommend something I've been listening to. How's that?
Fantastic.
You didn't expect that, did you?
No, it's been a while.
I'm going to recommend the first of the Big Finish audio novels. That is Scourge of the Cybermen, it's called. Scourge of the Cybermen. It's a Third Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith adventure, read and performed by John Coleshaw. It is absolutely stunning. It's stunning. It's a six. It's written in episodic form, so you get parts 1 to 6, all with cliffhangers and everything. So if you had a chance to hear Terror of the Master, which was part of the special edition of Masterful, released the first release for 2021, you would have heard that and got a taste of what John Coleshaw could do. And now you've got John Coleshaw in full swing. You've got Nick Briggs there doing the Cybermen. Really interesting take on the Cybermen. There's lots of different ecological and there's lots of politics in there. There's ecological stuff. There's lockdown stuff is that we can relate to. And it's done in a non-posturing way that really gets the message across, but entertains in a great story at the same time. So Shadow of the Scourge, invest the 8 hours that it will take to get through this.
Six if you listen at 1.5 speed.
I don't have the speed changer on my Android app at the moment. Otherwise, I might have been tempted to do that. But it was absolutely brilliant. With the sound effects, the music, John Coleshaw, he's got to be their top performer at the moment at Big Finish with all that he's doing. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, well, I've been wanting to get to it, hopefully, in the next week or two when I get to some other things I'm listening to as well. I'll get there.
Cool. That's it for this time. We hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again soon.
Yeah, guys, can I just say, if you enjoyed it, can you go to your Apple Podcast and give us a 5-star review and rating? We'd really love to get a few more ratings coming up. And also, there's a couple of people living in Germany who are listening to us. Why don't you guys tweet us or get on Facebook? We'd love to know what you're doing over in Germany. And to our audience around the world, it's very exciting to have you all. So thanks for listening, everyone. But yeah, if you could rate and review us on your podcast of choice, that would really help us out.
Thanks, Philip. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dwayne. Bye, everyone.
You have been listening to the Sirens of Audio, Episode 67, Randomoids 5, Attack of the Selectatrons, with your hosts, Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Next time, we're taking the week off, but we will be dropping the next episode of our Flashcast, Big Finish from the Beginning, with Rob from The Doctor Who Show. When we return, we'll be sharing our recent chat with Pamela Salem, known to Doctor Who fans for her roles as Toos in The Robots of Death, and Rachel in Remembrance of the Daleks on TV, and Countermeasures and the Robots for Big Finish. Theme music by the Jackpot Golden Boys. Email address is sirensofaudio@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. Follow us on your favourite podcatcher. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Join our Facebook group by searching for the Sirens of Audio on that platform. You can tweet us at Audio Sirens. And leave your own audio clip of feedback for us at anchor.fm/sirensofaudio for us to play on a future show. Thanks so much for listening, and keep listening to audio drama, because audio drama... Rawr!